Well, it's the final We've Learned Nothing podcast of 2017. So, Mr. Legg, I think it's safe to say we should partake in a tradition like everybody else at this time of year, and that is to take a look back at 2017. What piqued our interest? What caught our eye? And I have a little bit of a list. I don't know how formal you want to go about this, but I'll give you the floor. Where do you want to start when you look back and review 2017?
Well, how many of these podcasts do you think we've done?
How many 10? Of these podcasts do I think we've done? Yeah, 10, somewhere in that neighborhood, yep.
I was thinking about that on my drive in to work this morning, and I was thinking about our conversation yesterday about, you know, positioning this as a year in review, and I was trying to think back to the conversations we had. So I have five things, Rob, that I listed as what I thought were the common themes of our discussions.
Okay, let's go through those then.
Do you want me to list them all or just go one at a time?
I'll go one at a time, and you know how this works. We may not get to number five. You never know. We'll try.
Yeah, okay. All right. So number one is the growth and the birth of esports.
Yep.
And what I think is going to be a marker in how sports will be different in the future. And so we always seem to come back to that topic for whatever reason. We'll be talking about arenas or safety or something or other, and somehow it always comes back to what that's going to look like in the future as it relates to esports. And so I would say if I was to identify one main trend that I think is going to have a big impact on, quote-unquote, our industry, I would say it's that. And I think it's only going to continue to proliferate. And I say that based on, you know, I think it was PwC just, or there have been a couple of reports recently that are trying to, I think, identify the value of esports, and it's in the billions of dollars right now. And certainly with the proliferation of professional team sports, whether it's Aussie Rules or the NBA, that are starting to, I think, recognize that and support it, I think that's a trend that we'll look back on 2017 and say that was where it started.
I think so, and I think, you know, the fans and those already involved in esports will say, well, it didn't start in 2017. Absolutely true, 100%. But for me, the kind of the mainstream acceptance began, the reality, I think, for many of us is setting in. And I think back to something you sent me or sent out earlier in the year, probably about springtime, and somebody asked the question about esports in the Olympics, and, you know, it was kind of now you're being silly. I believe in 2018 it's going to be a demonstration sport in the Asian Games. The conversations are being had about what esports might look in an Olympic environment. You know, and the other part of it is the reporting that's being done now on essentially the sport having to clean itself up, but really get organized, really get formalized. You know, if you're going to compete in the Olympics, you got to have drug testing. If you're going to compete in the Olympics, you have to make sure that it's pure and can't be trifled with. You can't have gambling. You can't have, you know, all the negative influences that other quote unquote regular sports have gone through. To me, as we end 2017 and look to 2018, I am really no longer fascinated, but it's a matter of how big is this going to be. This isn't about whether or not it's going to take off. This is a matter now of how big it's going to be.
Oh, I agree completely. And, you know, maybe a parallel would be the rise of Ultimate Fighting. So Ultimate Fighting didn't start when UFC and, you know, Dana White took over. I mean, it started before that, but I guess as far as it kind of coming onto the public consciousness, I would say that this year, in my opinion anyways, it seems to me that it's... And what I have been amazed with, and maybe I shouldn't be amazed, but is the rapidness of it going from ha-ha-ha, as you just alluded to sure, it'll be considered as an official sport. Like, that, it seemed to be matters of weeks in some cases where that transition took place.
But that simple answer, that one's simple, money. I think once everybody realized what they were talking about, you can't ignore it. And if you can profit from it, we definitely want to do business with you. And mm-hmm. and that, to me, is the biggest thing. You know, the Olympics aside, just look at the professionals, you know, the mainstream North American professional sports and European sports that are trying to align themselves. The NBA 2K League, which will launch here in the spring. And, you know, they've got Jerry Ferrara of Entourage fame as the, you know, the head scout for the New York entrant. And, you know, how organized that is. Some reporting from Elliot Friedman. You know, a couple of weeks ago about the National Hockey League is you know, just waiting for technology to catch up. It's not a flight of fancy. It's like anything else in this world. If there's money, people want to be part of it. That is the one thing that I would pose to you, David, is the kind of the traditional homegrown esports community, those who are on Twitch, those who have been there, those who, you know it, breathe it, live it, you know, are watching Dota games and are participating in, you know, League of Legends and all of these sort of things. I just wonder how they're going to deal with, you know, everybody else kind of coming into their landscape with the interest and the money and the, well, that's not how we run a pro sports team. This is how we do it. That will also be a big challenge for them, is if they can mainstream.
Yeah, and again, I maybe Ultimate Fighting is a parallel that esports will follow. I mean, the introduction of gloves, padded gloves, into mixed martial arts and Ultimate Fighting.
Exactly.
You know, I think those that were probably involved in its earlier days would have probably been aghast at that, and that wasn't part of the, I don't know, the ethos. And going back to Fight Club, right? I mean, it'll likely have a similar backlash from those that were involved in the grassroots. And you're right, the business side of it will likely take precedence, and it will lose perhaps some of that grassroots nature. That will likely continue to survive in some form or another, but it will probably not be as well known, and it'll kind of remain as an underground opportunity, as I'm sure there are, you know, mixed martial arts events that continue to operate on the, you know, on the underbelly side that aren't sanctioned and don't have padded gloves, et cetera, et cetera. So I would think there'll be a similar parallel type of growth to it. But I think, if I was to identify one trend and one main theme, I would have said that was the first one that came to mind.
Yeah, I agree. And I think when we look back at 2018, to me, you know, are we talking about it? And if we are, what are we talking about? And I just think it'll be the unfettered growth. I think we'll have, you know, if you like, kind of somebody anointing it or somebody giving it stamp of approval, albeit the IOC or whoever. But I think in 2018, I don't think it's going away. I think it just becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And it might also, the one thing, and I'm not sure if we're going to get to this as a topic, but as we continue to look at the broadcasting landscape, I'm wondering if it's also going to ease the transition for other professional sports to look more at online platforms as delivery systems rather than traditional over-the-air cable, because that has not been the platform for esports. They have lived and thrived on online platforms, and I know that the NFL has some digital content coming up.
Yeah.
I believe MLB's and NBA. I wonder if there's going to be some kind of support or modeling that they're going to take from what, you know, Twitch and some of the other platforms have done for esports.
Yeah. So let me just circle back for one quick comment, and then I'll get to that. I mean, the other thing that we tend to do, you and I, is we try to hypothesize how any of the things that we're talking about are going to impact the future. And I have to admit, I focus a lot on this one for my students that are taking, you know, the students at Mount Royal that are taking sport and recreation business. Like, what are the implications for this from a professional career perspective? And I think it's going to have significant implications that are unseen and unknown at the moment. And so we're just really guessing as to how this is going to have an implication. And one of them, as you've just alluded to, could be in the broadcasting media side of things. And I would say, if I was to identify a second trend, it would be how sports are presented. And I would say that is another huge change that's taking place. And, you know, as it relates to esport, does the traditional television model and format, does it try to capitalize on this? And I think we're starting to see that already. I think TSN and Sportsnet have started having esports segments. You know, I mean, if they can show darts and poker on television, I don't see why they can't be showing other people playing video games. As much as I would not be interested in it, there appears to be an audience that would. And I mean, who's to say that you can't foresee a day where two people playing Madden football doesn't garner the same or more people watching a live NFL broadcast? So I think the television broadcasters will likely, if not already, are looking at this and trying to figure out how they can monetize it to, you know, to address what you've just spoken to, is how the sports franchises and the leagues themselves are also trying to take control of how sports are distributed and consumed, whether it's their own digital platforms, whether it's selling to networks or what have you, right? I mean, all the, you know, the Facebooks, the Twitters, the all these things are trying to get involved in the delivery of sport, because I think they see that as one of the last few bastions of where people will pay attention live. So I think there's going to be space for esport within traditional television, and I think traditional media markets are going to have to adapt to changing demands from a consumer like you and me.
The only thing I'll add to that is what I'm waiting for is North American. Now, I think ESPN has a little bit, but so far the programming that I've seen, over-the-air cable, esports programming, has been brought in from somewhere else, essentially not unlike poker. Poker was used as a filler, was produced by an entity and sold and used by TSN or Sportsnet or ESPN or whoever. That'll be the next thing I watch, is when do we start creating our own? When does Sportsnet start hiring their own staff to do it, or TSN or ESPN? You know, and ESPN, honestly, ESPN is the one that I would watch, as we're kind of morphing into this broadcast conversation. Obviously, as the season and the year wound out, we got the big news that John Skipper was out at ESPN, and I'm very curious to see what that does, because as I said to somebody recently, ESPN does a lot of R&D for everybody else. They're so big that they try things and they do things, and there's a lot of the other, and especially up in Canada, that they pay attention, go, does it work, doesn't it work, and then fall in line behind. That's what I'm going to be watching. Does ESPN all of a sudden jump on board and start creating their own? Your example of UFC is what I would point to as an example in the past. I mean, Sportsnet, TSN both sunk money into mixed martial arts when they had the rights, because there was value in that. They didn't just take, they took some programming external, but they also created their own internal programming. So that's the next thing I'll be watching there.
Well, I guess it becomes a bit of a chicken or egg. Do the networks and the media providers, do they create the market by which we consume it, or is the market there and they're just providing the opportunity for us to consume it? I guess there's probably an argument to be made for both sides. I don't think we're far away from, you know, TSN and Sportsnet and our other, perhaps not the major networks, but certainly the sports ones with their multiple platforms, I think showing esports as a viable television option. And maybe that they'll see that as a way to stop the quote-unquote cord cutters, because they'll only offer it in a live television format versus a digital one, which would not be an interesting conundrum, where the esports are moving away from that platform because of the financial imperative that the broadcasters are forcing down them.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So, I mean, that you might have just previewed 2018's wrap-up show, because I think that might be it. I do want to explore the second one, which is kind of the media and broadcasting this year. I know we've touched on it at times. What I wrote down for me this year were kind of just a societal shift in the media. Two debates and two issues that came up that I think have had prominent impact in what I do, and I think prominent impact on the way we consume sports and will, and that is, I think we finally got down to the brass tacks on, you know, just give me sports, don't give me politics. That has long been one of those debates, is, you know, I just want my sports, I don't want politics involved. And you know, I've long believed, you know, Dave, that, that sport has always been kind of on the cutting edge of social change. Jackie Robinson, you know, Muhammad Ali, all of these things have been drivers of social change. They may not have been comfortable and they may not have been fun at the time, but they were drivers for social change. And, you know, I think we really saw that in many ways with the athlete and the protesting and the NFL and how that was dealt with, and then the White House getting involved. And then I, you know, just to kind of tag on to that, you know, we saw this extreme accountability at the end of the year in the Me Too movement. And now that's not just a sports media thing, but it certainly played a role in that and brought in, and brought a lot of accountability to what, you know, was somewhat of a Wild West scenario, which I think we're beginning all to wake up to. So I think it was very interesting on that side and kind of the impact on how people go about and do their business.
Yeah, I can't disagree that that's certainly a major theme. I wonder, though, if it is that different than years past. It's always hard to place the recent context in a historical one and to compare apples to apples. And I don't, I guess I wonder if, you know, the interrelationship and the intersection of sport and society is more or less today than it has been in the past. And maybe the awareness of it, just the, with the proliferation of athletes having access to their own means by which to connect directly with the public, you know, the Twitters and the Instagrams of the world, that stuff has become just more available to us. So maybe these, you know, the athlete protests and the athlete involvement in politics and social change has always been there, but now they're given a platform and an opportunity to have that conversation completely on their own and directly. And I also suspect you're probably right in that society's tolerance, I don't know if tolerance is the right word, maybe tolerance is the right word, for transgressions, whether it's sexual harassment, gender inequality, those sort of things, is changing too, so that we're not willing to look the other way, and perhaps people are, you know, the first infraction is no longer just overlooked. It's you've crossed the line, and the line has been crossed, and therefore you need to step aside. And perhaps an example of that is the owner of the Carolina Panthers, who has been accused of, I think it's sexual harassment, but I can't be sure about that, and has already announced that he'll sell the team immediately. And will be stepping down from his, you know, his daily interactions. So, and whereas in the past, that probably may have, or I shouldn't say probably, that may have been, I don't know, brushed under the rug or swept under the rug.
Oh, it was definitely kind of brushed out of the club. Yeah, there was an old boys club. There's no doubt about it. There was that, that stuff's institutional in many ways. You know,
which is a good change. I think.
Oh, it's necessary. Absolutely.
You know, a good shift that we're seeing where, you know, the coach in Edmonton, I think it was gymnastics, that was just, you know, banned or disbarred. I'm not exactly sure what the correct wording would be, from being a coach. And, you know, these types of things are being highlighted. They're being publicized, and people are not standing for, in the past, what may have been a slight transgression. These are... The line has been crossed, and therefore there is no option. There's no discussion about it. And so maybe that's another change, another trend. And maybe it goes back to kind of the Joe Paterno Penn State scandal or transgressions. That, you know, those aren't probably the appropriate words, but, you know, what happened there with athlete abuse, and maybe people are finally saying, no, enough is enough, and we're not going to stand for that anymore.
I think that's a good thing to bring up. I mean, even go back as far as Graham James, and we've had these issues that have been uncomfortable, that have been, you know, disastrous, quite honestly, life-altering in a negative way. Yet in sports, we just kind of moved on. I mean, Paterno's an interesting one because of the support that he got, right? You know, the whole idea of, do they take the statue down or do they leave it up? That was a very divisive issue there. It just seemed like the dam broke this year, that, you know, enough is enough. it's wrong. It's black and white. It's no longer, well, he's one of our guys, or he's a football guy, or he's a hockey guy, or we just, you know, we can't do this. And I think as we end 2017, I think those are the two things that strike me the most. You know, kind of the that intersection of politics and sports this year, and certainly what happened there.
Well, and certainly
what else is on your list?
Okay, let's go back to this. Doping.
Yeah.
And so I think if we were to look back in a historical lens, if, you know, in 10, 15 years from now, you and I are still doing this and still have solved nothing, we might look back at this year as maybe, you know, not the apex, but kind of around that time when attitudes towards doping and sport changed. And so I think the IOC's decision to quote-unquote ban Russia from the 2018 Games is a significant marker, although, again, you could argue that them allowing Russian athletes to still participate, you know, under a united banner or whatever it is they're going to do is still a kind of a tepid response. But nonetheless, I think for the IOC, it's a significant change. And then following up with the IPC, International Paralympic Committee's decision to ban, you know, the Russian team from the 2016 Summer Games and a continuance of that for the 2018 Games, I think you're seeing now, and even today, I think there were announcements of Russian luge athletes having their medals pulled from them. I think there were a couple of Canadians that finally got a bronze medal after today.
Yeah, Canada won a bronze medal, you know, almost 4 years later, not quite, but almost.
Isn't that sad? Yeah, you don't get your moment in the limelight to win your medal. But anyway,
yeah, it's sad, but in a way, though, there's something I think empowering about the fact that. You know, it's kind of like the Mounties, right? We always get our man. You know, it almost feels like it's like doping now. Like, okay, you got away with it now, but we'll get you. And so you feel comfortable. You beat the system today. Guess what? We're keeping all the samples, and we're going to keep retesting. And when we find out, we're going to make it right. That's, you know, my biggest problem with what we just talked about is the fact that I don't think they went far enough with the Russians. I think it, to me, I get it. There's clean athletes. I understand that. That's terrific. But this is institutional. This is beyond anything we've ever seen. This is proven. This is not, you know, a hypothesis. This is fact. I think they should have shut them all down. I think they should have said, too bad. I'm sorry. You got to, you know, you got to move for change in your own country. But to me, it's like, no matter how bad it gets now, the bar is, well, the worst thing that can happen is I can't hear my anthem if I win. That's right. What it seems like to me.
Right, and so I would lean towards your approach as well. I tend to get swayed based on whoever I speak to last.
Right.
And so I've heard arguments from other people about it being a, you know, going against basic human rights and, you know, being accused of guilt without having your day in court, et cetera.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
But there you go. Yeah. So, but I do think I would lean towards your comment that the IOC didn't go far enough. But having said that, for the IOC, I think that was a pretty dramatic step.
That's true.
You know, again, if I was to look at a theme from this year, I would say that that's a significant one, although perhaps more, a recent one, just in the last month as a marker. But I would say over the year, there's been, you know, the release of the film Icarus, the McLaren report, the recognition that the guy from the Icarus film was a credible witness, I think the work that was done by a lot of Canadians, including Becky Scott, Dick Pound, to really highlight the need for change and the importance of clean sport, to me, that's a trend. And I think maybe we're at that apex where we'll start seeing more clean sport, changes to how athletes prepare and you know, train, et cetera, et cetera. You know, another example is baseball. And so I was watching the World Series, and I was noticing that the home runs being hit were more, I think, than they, like, there was that time after the steroid era where there was a big drop in home runs, but now it's come back up, and they're attributing it to a changing swing trajectory. And so baseball players are being taught to swing with an up
motion.
Curve. I'm not really sure what the right terminology is. So sport has adapted. So they recognized that perhaps steroids weren't going to allow them to hit more home runs, so they had to come up with a different technique. And so they simply adapted and were able to figure it out by changing the biomechanics of the swing. So again, I see that as a change where sport is saying, okay, so maybe the easy route of just simply juicing ourselves up with steroids and increasing muscle mass is not necessarily the only way to get higher, faster, stronger. And there are other ways to do it, and it's making sport be a bit more creative in their training. And baseball, as an example, was one that figured it out.
And I think baseball changed the ball. I think the ball has changed. I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, let's face it. The post lockout 94 when the Expos should have won the World Series. We all know that. The Mark McGwire, Sosa races, all of that stuff, that brought fans back. That did. You can't deny it. It wasn't right, but you can't deny it. I think they have altered the ball. You know, there's a line which I don't think we can use anymore, but I'll abridge it for 2017. Pretty people like the long ball. They do. People like the long ball, right? And I think your point about education and coaching, absolutely. Technology's played a role in that. Specialization has played a role in that. All of that. But I also think there's been an alteration of the ball to some degree.
So
theory. That's a theory. Alleged. I guess I have to say alleged.
Or Major
League Baseball can sue me. Yeah, alleged.
So building on the doping side of it, I would say another trend that I've noticed is an increased understanding and awareness and focus on athlete safety.
Mm-hmm.
And the long-term negative impacts of participation in sport. And I would say that, you know, gridiron football is the one where I've noticed this trend the most. But I'm not necessarily seeing it improving. But what I'm seeing is that there's a greater social recognition of the risks, inherent risks of participating. And I think we'll look back on this in years to come and say, well, that's where the NFL or, I don't know, fighting in hockey or et cetera, et cetera, died. That's where it started to die. And it was the recognition that I don't want my kids playing that sport. Why would I subject them to that type of physical punishment and long-term physical ailment? Right now, the trajectory for lifespan is, we're looking at the 80s and 90s now. And so if I'm retiring when I'm 60, I still want to have my knees, I still want to have my cognitive faculties as long as possible. And so maybe it's not a good idea to play competitive football. And then perhaps you start seeing a social stratification as to who the people are that can play these sports or do play these sports because they see that as their only opportunity to make a living and to get out of a certain social stratosphere. I think we'll look back on this and recognize that this was perhaps a bit of a change, a line in the sand as well.
I hope so, but I go back to the conversation we had about esports, and I'll bring in the old dollar again. I think money is still holding us back truly from having an open and honest conversation, and I think it's also holding us back from truly doing the right things. I think the threat of lawsuits or pending lawsuits or payouts, the fact that lawyers, and I'm not demeaning lawyers, but there's so many lawyers involved in this, I think you have lots of people who are asking questions, lots of people who are raising concerns, but I think, you know, the top end does not want to hear it. The top end does not want to engage in a meaningful conversation. I point to the book that Ken Dryden wrote on Steve Montador, Endgame. And in there he puts two simple proposals for hockey. I don't necessarily agree with both of them, but I think we should have a conversation. But we're not going to have a conversation as long as Gary Bettman's involved, and that's because there's pending lawsuits. So I appreciate what you're saying, and I hope you're right, but I still think we're stifled by dollars. I still think money precludes us from truly having the meaningful conversations that we need to have at the top end about those issues. And you know, how can we make sports safer? But, you know, how can we had this in our last podcast, that whole conversation about, but can what can we keep in? How can we keep it? What part of the physicality, you know, is okay? But until we somehow solve the factor and allow both parties, all sides, to have a voice in this without threat of being sued for what they say, I think we're stopping short.
Well, but could you not also argue that money then becomes the driver to force that change? And so as an example, I've said this to you before, I'm a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan. I'm still ticked off about the game against the Patriots on Sunday. But anyways, that's beside
the point. Why? What's a catch?
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, yeah, that maybe that's my biggest trend
that's
of the year.
That's another podcast. Yeah.
Is the cheating of the New England Patriots, but whatever. There was a game 2 weeks ago where I think where Pittsburgh played Cincinnati. It was a Monday night game. And there were three or four hits where if that was my son that was getting hit like that or was doing the hitting, I wouldn't want them to play football. And I have to admit, there was part of me that was a bit uneasy even watching it or cheering for it or recognizing that maybe I'm part of the problem by promoting it and encouraging it. And if people start to turn away from it as consumers and as fans, I think that becomes the easy answer for the change in the sport itself is money. And so if institutions, we've talked about this before, the University of San Diego, I think there was a couple articles about from faculty questioning whether or not they could support having a varsity football team on their campus if they knowingly recognize that participation leads to long-term negative health impacts. If institutions start to turn away from it, if television broadcasters are noticing a downtick in viewership, if sponsors are recognizing that, you know, there are groups of people who no longer want to endorse or support a sport that is, creating physical hardships for athletes, if lawsuits that, you know, come from athletes related to, you know, you knowingly put us in situations that were harmful and now we are subject to long-term health impacts. I think if those financial factors have a big enough impact, it could change the way that the sports are presented or are played. But I think you're right. Until those financial implications come, I think the leaders of the sports themselves will pay lip service to player safety for fear that it'll be a financial burden on them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. All right, what's next on your list?
Well, I mean, it's very Calgary-centric.
That's okay.
But the whole legacy and the value of sport. And so I guess it's not Calgary-centric. I mean, these conversations happen in lots of different places, but so us potentially building a new rink and whether we should or we shouldn't. And there was an article a couple weeks ago, I think, that made mention of Houston wanting to purchase the team in a couple of years if a new rink isn't built. Seattle has kind of put up their hand saying that they want a team, and it would probably be pretty simple for the Flames just to make that transition to there. So there's that side of it. And then, of course, the potential for a Calgary bid to host the 2026 Olympic and Paralympic Games. And, you know, what are the legacies of hosting games? What are the cost-benefit analysis of hosting games? And so I would say that there's an increasingly greater scrutiny, perhaps, from the public as to is this really something we want to support, and is it something we want to support at any cost? And so I'm wondering if there's a bit of a switch in, we need a professional sport franchise here, and we will do whatever it takes to keep that team here, too. You know, what, we really like having a team here, and we see it as a real benefit and a real value. However, we need to be shown, the benefits. And as another example, I've really noticed in the last 4 months a downtick since the election, civic election here in Calgary, a downtick in the Calgary Sports Entertainment Corporation. I haven't seen a lot from them about the arena discussions or promoting that side of it. But what I have noticed is that the Flames in particular are doing a much better job of publicizing all the good things that they do in the community. An example, building the new outdoor rink down in Fernie. As but one example. I don't know if that's been purposeful or that's just me, seeing things that aren't really happening or I'm just paying more attention to it. But I've noticed a change in how the Flames are presenting themselves publicly since the election. And I've also noticed a change in how the public responds to both the opportunities both for high-level mega events like an Olympic and Paralympic Games and the professional franchises being in their locale.
I agree with your what you just said there, particularly about the Flames, and I'll come back, loop back to that. But I want to go back to the beginning. I believe more and more and more that this is a generational thing, and not from the standpoint that, you know, one is better than the other. But I just think younger people now, with access to information, are asking more questions. And quite honestly, good, bad, or indifferent, are saying, do I want it? Yes. Do I want to pay for it? No. I want transparency.
Yeah.
The problem with transparency, the real problem with transparency, is it doesn't allow for dreamers. I got to be honest with you. I mean, if we took 1988, which is arguably this city's biggest achievement and one of the biggest legacies that we've ever seen with the Olympic movement, if we took and viewed it through the prism that we view things today, it would have never happened. Not a chance. No way. Wouldn't happen. And that's not a good thing. That's not a bad thing. That's just the way things have changed. And to me, I come away this year more, I guess, steadfast in my thought process that, you know, as the next generation takes over, these things are going to change. They're going to have to evolve into some other way. They're going to have to find a way to evolve into something else. I found it a little ironic that, you know, opponents of the arena deal here in Calgary were praising the New York Islanders for getting a deal done to get an arena in Belmont. It's apples and a cow. It's not even apples and oranges. I mean, it's so far apart. It's not even close. You know, they were given a 30-acre lot to put a proposal on. They're building an arena, and that's great for one-third of the group that's putting it together. The other two-thirds, 42 dates for the Islanders is great, but now the people that own Madison Square Gardens are going to be able to book you twice. When you come into Madison Square Garden, you play there, then you go play at Belmont. So they're going to make money. Oakview, who's building the arena in Seattle, is building the arena in Belmont. Oh, and by the way, about 400,000 square feet of shopping and a hotel and, right? So they're not the same. The Flames are looking for help. Ottawa's more like Belmont than Calgary. But I think we just lump everything together and say, well, they got it done. So you get it's not. You can't. It's not the same. But I think that's part of the challenge nowadays. To your point about the Flames, if I'm critical of the Calgary Flames of one thing, it's I think they bungled the start of this whole process. They should have never come out and said, let's have a conversation about a vision. That's too kumbaya-ish. I mean, what are we going to make s'mores around a campfire, 100 million of us, and sit around and talk about what Calgary's going to look like? Should have come out with a plan and said, this is what it is, this is our vision, this is where we see it, this is how many washrooms we're going to have, this is how many restaurants we're going to have, this is our plan. But they allowed the city and they allowed opponents of the project to kind of change the conversation and take it in a different direction. So I think you are seeing the Flames kind of go, well, this is what we're doing in the community. I would tell you this, I don't think they're doing more. I just think they're publicizing it more. I think they've always done it. The foundation's always done it. The owners have always been philanthropic. But they've also said, well, we don't need to have our names out there. Well, now you do. Now you really have to. Okay, so if it's about transparency, then let's be really transparent about that. These are the things. These are the kids we're funding in minor hockey. These are the programs that we're giving to the YMCA and the YWCA. That's where I think that change comes from. I think it's absolutely by design.
And, I mean, I have to be aware. Like, I'm not coming at this in an unbiased way, because I really like having the Stamps and the Roughnecks and the Hitmen here. Like, that to me is a huge value added of living in this area. I would be very sad if they left, if any of those four teams left. So, and I have to kind of be cognizant of that when we're having these conversations. I don't want to come across as too much of a like a sycophant.
Well, no,
Like deep down, I really am pulling that they can figure this out and they can stay.
Yep. Well, it directly employs me in the way that I don't think you have any of those teams. Well, you need a sports.
And I want you to stay too, Rob.
I would like to stay too. Did we get to all of it?
Yeah, you checked off my five.
Because we solved nothing. I got to tell you, Dave, we've solved nothing again. I guess you and I will have to. Our New Year's resolution is to try again in 2018 and to solve something. We'll try to solve something.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe that's what we'll do. Let's do one more, at least half year of we've solved nothing, and then we should change the name and try and redirect it a little bit and try and actually do something productive.
I agree. Merry Christmas to you. Happy New Year. All the best in 2018. Thank you for bringing this Christmas present to me early. I love doing this podcast. It's been so much fun, and I'm really excited about doing it again in 2018. So thank you, Dave.
You are most welcome. It's been my absolute pleasure, and I would reciprocate and return all those platitudes to you, Rob. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to our listeners, and I look forward to continuing this conversation.